Blog Talk Radio.
It's all that market.
Good evening, everybody. This is your host today, Mike Bailey. It's Saturday, November 25th. Today, we're going to be talking about a couple teams that are not, they're not living up to everybody's expectations after last year. It's going to be the Edmonton Oilers and the Pittsburgh Penguins. As we all know, the Penguins won the Stanley Cup last year, and they're sputtering right now. But we'll be talking to them at 8:30 later on tonight. We have a guest coming in. But right now we're going to be talking about the Oilers. Last year, made the playoffs. They surprised me. I didn't think they were going to make the playoffs last year. This year, they're more in the fight for the lottery pick, it seems like. But I have a guest coming in here, Sean. Big Oilers fan, so we'll be discussing them. Hey, Sean, how's it going?
Good, Mike. How are you?
Doing pretty good. So, you've got some theories on the Oilers here with them and not really living up to what everybody thought they were going to live up to, right?
Yeah. I got theories. I got no answers, just like pretty much everybody else around the organization. So, yeah,
now,
it's been frustrating.
Frustrated. I can relate. To see the Oilers much. I see them play earlier this year when they came to Philadelphia, and when they didn't seem. It didn't seem like there was any chemistry between the players on the ice. They just didn't. I don't know what to say. They didn't look like they were really with it. Do you think this is a chemistry thing that's going on with them?
It very well could be. I'm not gonna take a dump on the coach at this point because, like you said in your intro last year, that they made the playoffs and that was very surprising. We were ecstatic and excited, and I think a lot of that had to do with the structure that was brought in. But you're right. There seems to be either a lack of commitment to the structure that was set up or just the wrong players playing together. But the team didn't have a whole lot of turnover from last year, so I don't understand if it's a chemistry issue where that issue arose from, because these guys were playing together last year and you know they made some noise in the playoffs too, so they were playing well. But they have.
Are you going to put this more like the season so far? Is it the goal scoring is not compared to last year, or is it more goaltending isn't there compared to last year?
It's all of it, man. They're not scoring goals like they were last year. If you look it up, they're in the bottom, I think, third or fifth in goal scoring, and the Cam Talbot save percentage is low this year. He's not been playing like he did last year, and there's been some nights where he's been shaky, and that wasn't how he was last year. If he let in a bad goal, he bounced back. This year, he lets in a bad goal and he's done.
Yeah, I mean, look at the statue. Yeah, they are fifth in goals against at 76, and their goals for, they are currently ranked 26 with 60 goals for so far in the season. So yeah, goals.
Right.
Yeah, you're not getting either one of those right now, and it's just gonna make the season. Yeah, it's gonna make the season long for you. What do you think? Do you think a trade needs to happen? And if a trade, would you rather go for a defenseman or forward?
Well, I personally would try and pick up a winger that can score. I mean, the defense has been playing okay. They're not amazing, and everybody knows, it's no secret that for a decade we need a defenseman here, which is why it was so imperative that we traded our best player for a defenseman, that a lot of people thought that we lost that trade, myself included.
Mm-hmm.
But we need a winger that can skate and score, really. And that's probably the number one thing, because the two guys on our left wing, although great, and they do lots of good things, Maroon and Lucic, but they're big and they're strong, which is what Shirelli likes, but they're not fast, and they don't put the puck in the net as consistent as they should.
Yeah, and a lot of teams out west seem to follow that with a big, strong defenseman, and maybe not as much skill as on the east, but on the west, I mean, there's skill in the west, obviously, in the defense. You know, you got Bufflin back there, Doughty, you know, there's skill back there. But yeah, like you said, they're more bigger, slower.
I know for sure, man. They're I mean, outside of McDavid, there's a couple guys that can scoot. Like Cassian's got some legs on him. He can turn it up, but he's not consistent enough, which is why he's in the bottom six. But in a top six, outside of McDavid, nobody can really fly. So last year, their bread and butter was the cycle, and they had a cycle going in the ground and pound on the cycle, and that just, it has been going away. Teams are onto them, I think, maybe. They watch the tape, and if you take McDavid out of the play, can't really ground and pound after that, right? So it's,
yeah,
goal scoring has definitely gone to the wayside.
Yeah, now, we know they signed Lucic for that 6 years, not this mm-hmm. offseason, but the last offseason. Do you think that's mm-hmm. going to come back and bite them in the ass?
Oh, absolutely. It was a good contract for the first 3, maybe 4 years, but that contract will for sure 100% bite them in the ass in the last two. Same with Russell's contract. I mean, I like Chris Russell, but he's not a $4 million defenseman, and he's certainly not a $4 million defenseman for 4 years. If you want to sign him to $4 million, make it a 2-year contract. If he wanted the term, he should have taken a hit on the money, but they gave him both, and that's a lot of money to pay a guy who can't prevent zone entries. You know, he just blocks shots.
Now, like I said, I don't get to see the Oilers much. I saw them one game already this year when they came to Philadelphia, and I don't remember a whole bunch of that game, but. Are they turning over the puck a lot in their own zones? Has that been an issue for them at all this year?
It's been an issue for a couple of years where they turn it over in the neutral zone. They're one of those teams that likes to flash and dash in the neutral zone, make an extra pass, do a spinorama for the big play at the blue line, and yeah, they turn it over a lot in the neutral zone. And last year their cycle was not a whole lot of one and done. They would get the cycle going, and they would get chances and chances and chances. This year, it's a lot of one and duns, and the games that they have been successful is because they've made chances on the cycle and the forecheck.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not. It's not the same this year, and I have no idea why. But it's TV shaking, remote control to the TV, frustrating. So.
Yeah. Now, last night you guys played up in Buffalo. You ended up losing the game 3-1. I read earlier today on Sportsnet that you guys are breaking up your top line of McDavid, Dreisaitl, and Nugent Hopkins. They're all going to go to their own lines, it looks like, and
mm-hmm.
Camilleri is going to be moved up to the first line. Do you think that might spark them into maybe starting to score some more goals, or –
I have no idea. I know.
Yeah.
Todd McClellan's preached it since he got here. He likes to work in pairs, and I know he did that in San Jose too. He liked to keep Joe Thornton and Joe Pavelski together, and he kept Marleau and Couture together, and I know that's kind of what he liked to do. So he did that here, and it worked last year, and this year he kept those pairs together. But the top line for a while was Maroon, McDavid, and Dreisaitl. And they didn't produce a lick 5-on-5. They did nothing 5-on-5. And it was like, why are they playing together? So if you separate your three big centermen who are, I mean, all the credit to Nugent Hopkins. He was he didn't play very good last year. He didn't play very good the year before that. He's been going this year. Him and McDavid are the two bright spots this year and probably the only two. So it maybe giving those guys their own line, maybe you can get a good matchup with a third pairing defenseman against, say, Ryan Nugent Hopkins and two wingers. And maybe they're hoping Camilleri can just take the feed from McDavid and just shoot it, because that's what they got him. That's what they brought him in for, was his snapshot, right? So maybe that's the thought process on it. If not,
yeah, it looks like
I don't know.
Yeah, it looks like they're moving Camilleri up to the top line there. McDavid and Lucic will also be.
Lucic will also be
up there as well. So
it could be the start. Okay, so then. Yeah, so then they'll have Strome play with Kara and maybe Kajula, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, they. That's one thing that they do a lot of that I don't like either, is they don't let lines develop chemistry. McCollin does change the lines up a lot, almost to a detriment sometimes. I think he overthinks it a little bit. But, I mean, when your team's losing, yeah, do fucking something, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can only lose for so long and keep doing the same thing, expect the same. So it's just one of those things all teams have to do once in a while, just do a major shakeup of the lines and hope for the best.
Yep.
I had another question here, but I lost it.
Yeah, that's all right. My biggest problem is when they brought in all the new management, everybody was really excited that they were getting rid of the old guard, kind of the old boys on the bus, old Oilers guys, because everyone's like, oh, all Oilers fans live in the past. They live in the 80s and they never get out of the 80s. And that's true for sure. You know, living in the city, we that's all we talk about. But so I wanted this new guard brought in, but I don't know about Chiarelli's trading ability, man. He's lost a lot of trades. He's only won maybe two trades that he's made, and he's lost a lot of trades, and you can't lose that many trades and be competitive.
Yeah, now, are you scared that he might do something drastic here in Edmonton and trade away another key piece and end up hurting them even in the longer run?
Yeah, there was because last offseason, it was either Nugent Hopkins or Eberle was going to get moved. It was whoever they can move first and get the biggest asset back. And that scares me that Nugent Hopkins stayed and Eberle went for Strome, because that's a horrendously terrible trade in terms of skill. So that either means that the league sees Ryan Nugent Hopkins as nothing, which isn't good for us. Or B, they considered Eberle a bigger problem than Nugent Hopkins at that time. So they had to get rid of one of them because of the salary. I get that. And you could say that Strome is half the player that Eberle is because he makes half the money. And if you look at the numbers, that it's kind of trending that way. But you're losing that trade. You know, if you make 10 of those trades and only 8 – and only 2 are good and 8 are bad, that's not a good track record in terms of trade. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What's the feel out there in the East? Are we still the laughing stock like we were for the last 10 years?
Oh, there's quite a few teams are the laughing stock, but yeah, the Oilers are back up there. Everybody's talking, they're back in their normal spot, competing for the lottery pick again, and just the normal talk out there in the world. But
yeah.
All right, everybody. We're going to take a 5-minute break. I got to reset a couple things here, and we'll be back here in 5 minutes, so around 7:50 Eastern time. All right, everybody. We're back here. Couldn't find my notebook on my question, so I'm just kind of winging it right now. But We're here with Sean, big fan there of the Oilers. We're talking about the Oilers right now and how they're not really living up to anybody's expectations. Now, as we were talking before, we're talking about making possible trades for the Oilers. Would you rather them just wait on it before they do anything drastic like that and just see if they come out of this funk they're in and maybe possibly pull someone up from the AHL?
Well, I'll start with the last part of that question. The AHL, they have some good prospects in the prospect pool, but I don't see anybody coming up that would make an immediate impact, so I don't really see the point of that. Unless they fall into injury troubles, I kind of would just let the guys that are down there develop. Because they honestly have a good mix of prospects down there and AHL staples, so kind of the veterans that show the prospect kind of what's going on. And they're the tweeners that get called up when there's injuries and so on and so forth. So they have a good mix of those players. I know on July 1st, Shirelli signed to make the depth on the AHL team better. I know the Condors aren't doing too great this year, but they're not terrible. As for a trade, this is kind of the year where they need to show everybody that they're for real, because next year you got $12.5 million kicking in that we're not going to be able to get rid of, right? So this is kind of the year where if you want to do something at the deadline and make a big splash, or even before that, this is the year to do it, because we have cap space this year. Next year, we're not going to have that luxury. So I would make a trade.
Kind of comes into where that whole Leachy contract comes into as well, giving
right.
them that $6 million.
Absolutely. Like, I know they're going to lose Mark Fain's contract next year, and Pouliot's buyout will come off the books, so that'll open up $6 million or $5 million. $5 million. But that's not – but they have a whole bunch of RFAs and UFAs coming up in the next 2 years. They got a whole bunch of Maroon's contract is over. Strome's contract is over. Talbot's contract is over. A bunch of their bottom six forwards, like Kajula was a big college signing they signed last year, and all those contracts are over. So they're not going to have a whole lot of room to sign guys. So if you want to bring in a high-ticket winger or a high-ticket defenseman that's going to be UFA next year, now's the time to do it.
Yeah, definitely. Now, one thing we haven't talked about yet is McDavid. When I was at that game in Philadelphia and when the Oilers were there, one of the reasons I went to the game because I wanted to see how McDavid – I want to see him in person. I haven't seen him live yet. And I was disappointed. I didn't even know he was really on the ice. Like, I saw him take a couple shots here and there, some good wrist shots. But other than that, I didn't realize him on the ice at all. Like, I didn't see his speed, his stick handling, his playmaking, or nothing. Has he been a non-factor in more games than not this year? Like, is he in his own little slump as well? Or is this more, do you think it's just the team in general is just not all with it?
It would be based on his expectations of himself. I mean, we have, as a fan base, we have the highest expectations in the world for him, and as we should. I mean, he's been labeled as the next best player the NHL has ever seen, and I'd say 9 times out of 10, he is that player. But last year, he was a factor in pretty much every single game. And you're right. In the game in Philly, you hardly noticed him, and that's super disappointing. And there have been games this year where we haven't noticed him that much. But in the same token, a complete 180 to that, there are games where he took over 100% and was the reason why the Oilers won the game. And that's a lot of weight on a 20-year-old's shoulders. Now, I know he's got to get used to it because he is considered one of, if not the best player in the world. But if that's the case, then you got to be a factor every single game. So we're not bragging on the kid, because we're not going to do that, because we don't want to we don't want to run him out of town like we do 99% of the players that play for us. But, I think guys are struggling around him. And if you look at his numbers, he's not struggling. But if you look at his play in some games, he has struggled greatly.
Now, do you think he's just in some sort of a slump, or is it just teams got the video on him? They know what to do with him. They know how to contain him a little bit better than they have been able to in the past.
I think, I definitely think there's he's the number one on a list of game plans that that an opposing coach will give out. He's number one now. And last year he might have been number two or three because people didn't know quite how fast and how quick he could be. He showed flashes in his rookie year, and then he got hurt and he came back. Oh yeah, thanks for hurting him, by the way. I forgot about that. he came back and, you know, his shoulder wasn't as good as it could be. But I think the book's out on him, man. I do. And guys are smart enough, and they're all good enough that they can play him enough to make him not as big of a factor. And when you take him away, the other guys aren't performing like they should. Like they're being paid to.
Yeah. Well, since you brought up that whole injury thing, and Sportsnet, they made a whole issue out of the so-called rivalry between Brandon Manning and Connor McDavid.
Yeah. Right.
Are we? Yeah. Yeah, that the whole thing was a joke to me. It was just dumb to begin with. Like, there's no. It's just. Was that just hockey players being hockey players type of thing? Or is it done, this whole so-called rivalry that never should have started?
I would think so. I mean, it was nothing until the media kind of made something of it. And then McDavid said, Manning said he did it on purpose when they played his first game back when they played them. He said Brandon Manning said he hurt him on purpose or whatever. So then they kind of had their little spat over the microphones back and forth. And then Manning fought Maroon for it the next game. And it was kind of over after that. There's no rivalry there. If you watch the play, like I've watched it 100 times, I'm not so much of a blowhard homer that Manning did on purpose. It was impossible for Manning to do that on purpose. The way McDavid was coming in, the way Manning turned, like McDavid beat him and then he lost an edge and then they crashed into the boards. Like it was stupid. And the fact, if Manning said that he did it on purpose, he did it to get himself going, I think. Because he was struggling at that time.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure he was.
Yeah, just to get into his head and stuff. Just hockey players chirping, like, that's not even the worst. That's not the worst stuff that I've heard come from the. And pretty close to them. Yeah, you hear all kinds of shit that you wouldn't tell anybody else on the or that you wouldn't tell your own family members and shit like that. So I mean, I've heard, but it didn't help that Don Cherry of all people went on a whole rant saying that Manning just did it on purpose, intentionally hurt him. Just, you know, Don Cherry being Don Cherry, he just kind of, I think more, he just likes to hear himself speak likes to hear himself talk and just Don Cherry being Don Cherry just got it riled up too much, I think.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I mean, I think it was more than it needs to be, but the media needs to write about something. They need articles to write about. They can't keep writing about Corsi. And they can't keep writing about, you know, feel good stories of players doing good things with kids in the community and so on and so forth. Cause you know, like you write those stories and everyone's like, and they expect that and it's good. So they need to get that old time feel back, that rivalry, the Battle of Alberta or in your case, the Flyers against the Penguins in the playoffs when Crosby's smacking Voracek's glove away with his stick after the whistle kind of thing. And, you know, like that's the stuff that they want to write about. And maybe that'll spark their team to play better or whatever. And I think that's kind of what that whole thing was Manning was chirping him and he knew how to cut to him because he hurt him. he was involved in the play that McDavid got hurt on. So he was just trooping. He was just doing what he does. And that's what every player does, right?
Yeah, right. Now, I know we spoke on this earlier a little bit. I don't remember if it was before the show started or not, but we were talking about Cam Talbot a little bit.
Yeah.
What do you think his confidence is right now? With everything that's been going
It's in the tank, man. His confidence is where my supper is. It's going down the pipes, man. It's just not good. Last year, he would let in a bad goal, he would bounce back. And he had some bad goals. I mean, he had a couple of bad goals in that Anaheim series, too. And he was able to bounce back the next game or the next play. He was like that last year. He was still young. He was still learning how to be a starting goaltender. But he played amazing last year because he had all the confidence in the world. This year, there's not. He's a shell of himself. And I don't know if that's because he's not actually as good as his numbers last year perceived him to be, or if he's just sucking wind because his confidence is so low.
Yeah. All right, everybody. If you guys out there are listening to this right now, you guys have a question, or you have an opinion on something with the Oilers, go ahead and give us a call, 661-449-9307. That's 661-449-9307. We're talking to Oilers right now. Like we've been saying, they haven't had the season that they've expected, or what I don't think anybody else expected them to be doing so poorly right now. But yeah, if you guys have a question, you want to throw your opinions at us, go ahead and give us a call, 661-449-9307. We'll be back in 5 minutes. Welcome back, everybody. We're going to be finishing up here in the Oilers here in about 10-15 minutes before we take another break and go on to the Penguins. But first, I want to ask Sean, last year when they made the playoffs, was that the real Edmonton Oilers, or was that just some type of like magical season that they got lucky with, do you think?
I sure hope it was, man. I really want that to be the Oilers the next however long McDavid can play for, until we trade him for money like we did Gretzky. Honestly, as of right now, my confidence in this team has never been lower. If you ask me honestly, like if you go on my socials, I shit on this team more than anybody shits on any team ever right now. And it all started in that game they blew in the playoffs against Anaheim when they had a 3-goal lead in the last 5 minutes. When they blew that game, I was like, this team is garbage to me. And I had confidence coming into the season, but not a whole lot. I had cautious confidence. I was cautiously optimistic about this team because they've been so bad so long. And I'm not a homer Oilers fan. I'm an honest Oilers fan. I definitely know that this team is shit right now. They are not playing well. And they're not good. And I don't know if it's because they're just not good enough or if it's a confidence thing or a structure thing. But if last year was a flash in the pan, they could be the next Colorado Avalanche, who had that miraculous season that one year when they had Anderson, when he stood on his head in the playoffs there for him. And if that's the case, we're this season going to burn to the ground and we're all going to move to Red Deer. Because it's not good here, man, and it sucks when fan bases of teams that also suck are making fun of you, and you're just like, well, my team sucks. I don't know what else to tell you, man. I accept your beaking and your insults because I can't defend them as of right now. If this was last year, I'd be all up in that shit. I'd be all up your ass. Like, no, you're wrong. But right now, man, outside of McDavid and a couple flashes of brilliance from the odd player here and there, there's not much going on. But I hope that what happened last year is what this team can be. And I think the NHL wants that too, because they don't want the same two or three teams getting shit on. It gets boring. Like, the Islanders were terrible for years, and I got tired of making fun of them.
Hello, Sean, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, man.
Yes, I don't know what happened. Everything just went black for me, so I had to... We're back. We're back live.
Okay, cool. That's cool, man.
Cool. Yeah,
like, computers, I get it.
Yeah, it was weird. But as I was saying, I saw a couple articles. I didn't get to read them, but I saw that they were... People weren't too happy with McDavid. They were starting to call for his head a little bit. Now, obviously, this isn't all McDavid's fault. None of it's really McDavid's fault, but I'm guessing that the rest of Edmonton's probably... Well, what's the buzz in Edmonton like? Like, what's the confidence of the fan base, do you think?
I've read a couple articles written by local writers, too, about... a couple of them were calling for not his head, but they were just saying that he hasn't been playing as good as he should, and they think there's a greater issue going on. But I don't see it. I think it's more people don't realize that other teams are good too. Like, and I'd say the majority of teams have one or two defensemen that can, if not keep up with McDavid, which they can't, but they can contain him. And it's also unfair if that's the case. I know a lot of people I talk to around town are okay with him, and they should be. Mm-hmm. He was a gift from the hockey gods to us that we didn't deserve, but we got him anyways, so we're just going to kind of ride that train until that train hopefully retires at 65, but yeah, it's those articles are calling for his head. I think are being a little unfair, and that also has to do with a lot of expectations that were made around McDavid that he didn't make. So, yeah, it's unfair, I think.
Yeah. All right, man. I know you wanted some time to just vent on the Oilers. You had some stuff you want to get off your chest and say. So I'm gonna give you the next 7 minutes to go ahead and get whatever you need to say off your chest.
Okay, well, the first thing I have to get off my chest is if you're a shitty team and you're beaking me, but know that your team is also shitty. So I don't know if you're in a position to be beaking me or not. However, the Oilers are terrible right now. And just know that the majority of Edmonton fans aren't complete blowhards. The blowhards are the ones that have the biggest mic and they have the fastest fingers when they type. And there's a perception out there that they're the ones that are running the show, and they're not. However, there are blowhard fans, and they are stupid. And you shouldn't listen to them because they're stupid. Now, the team sucks right now, and it sucks because last year was amazing. I've never had so much fun going out to the bar, having drinks, watching the Oilers play, playing San Jose. The games were tight. Playing Anaheim, the games were intense and rough, and it was old-time hockey again, and I want that back. They don't need to win the cup. Well, they do need to win the cup, but I just want them to be competitive in the playoffs. That's all I want. And I think your team, Mike, and my team, Mike, are byproducts of the asshole Chris Pronger fucking everything up and leaving everybody behind. So, yeah, thanks for listening, boys. I'm done. If you don't like the Oilers, that's cool. If you don't like me, that's cool. But listen to the podcast anyways.
quick question. Do the Oilers turn it around do they turn it around this year and make the playoffs?
No. They have to win 37 games in their last 58 games. And unless they go on a 10-game heater here in the next, and that sucks. But I don't see it. I don't know if they'll finish in the bottom five. They might turn it around and make things a little interesting, but I don't think they'll get in.
Well, you're not going to be the most famous person in Edmonton then, are you?
No. Gotta be realistic, man. That's a lot of ground to make up. Are they capable of it? Maybe. I haven't seen it. They can't even win two games in a row.
For your sake, maybe they'll pull off something in Boston. Boston. It's always nice to go into Boston and get a win. But all right, everybody, that's gonna do it for our Oilers segment. We're gonna be talking about the Penguins here in about 10 minutes. We have someone calling in. And we'll. Not everything's going well in Penguin Land, so we'll go ahead and tear them apart too. Okay. So yeah, if you guys have any questions for the Penguins, 661-449-9307. We'll be back around 8:25. Welcome back, everybody, here to the Gloves Off Hockey Podcast. We're going to be speaking on about the Penguins, who recently have come across their struggles. They're playing tonight in Tampa Bay, where they currently have a 4-1 lead over the Tampa Bay Lightning. It was just 4-0, but Tampa just scored a couple minutes ago. So Tampa Bay is trying to fight back in and shut down the Penguins. We have Medina. She writes for the Pens Initiative on Twitter. That's at the Pens Initiative on Twitter. So for all you Penguins fans out there, go ahead and give them a follow. And Medina, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, we're doing good up here. Now I read your article that you wrote back on the 15th. About the Penguins, and you said before they didn't look like they're having fun playing. They had some chemistry issues, you think?
That's just something that, you know, watching them play, watching how they interact, and even just how they speak to each other, or to the reporters and the media, there just seems to be something missing. And it's really hard to really pinpoint what it is.
Mm-hmm. Now, I remember last year they started the season off slowly. They didn't look like a good team that was eventually going to go on and win the Stanley Cup. And they ended up changing head coaches during the season. Do you think they might need another type of spark? Maybe something like that to get them going? Well, they seem to have found it tonight anyway, but do you think they need to make a change somewhere, not necessarily a head coach change?
I don't see them making a coaching change, especially coming off back-to-back cup wins. I mean, that would just be a little insane in my eyes, but stranger things. Do I think there could come a roster shakeup? I think it's more likely than not.
Yeah.
Who's coming and going is up for anyone's debate. I mean, the last rumor that I heard of was from L.A. Friedman. He was floating the potential of that the Penguins were talking to the Canadiens, and Max Pacioretty's name was involved. But that was last week, and I haven't really heard anything else since or anything else that could substantiate that. So what is going on in that realm is for anyone's guess. But they're really lacking those character players that define those two cup teams. And that's really something that they need to put back on the team.
Yeah. So we need to find that character player for you guys. They look good tonight, then, I'm guessing, right? They look like the old Penguins teams that was going on to winning those two cups.
They seem to have remembered how to play at least tonight. They're playing at home in Pittsburgh, and, you know, they ended the first period up 3-0. Now, mind you, they were on a 5-on-3 and a 2-minute minor power play for those goals. But they're playing with a lot more discipline tonight. They seem like they have some urgency, like something has clicked in their head. Now, is it just tonight? Will that carry over to next week? Since they play the Flyers coming next week. Who's to say? But tonight they seem to have gotten it together, at least for now.
Right. As the NHL announced, with the Flyers and Penguins, they have the outdoor game next year in in Philadelphia at Lincoln Financial Field. It's going to be February 3rd, I think it was.
February in Philadelphia, where everybody wants to be. Not.
Well, from what I hear is, like, everybody's kind of tired of the outdoor game, and this will be the Penguins' 5th one. This will be the Flyers' 4th one. I haven't been to an outdoor game yet. I'm not a fan of standing out in the cold winter for four or five hours. But this one, I'll probably end up going to. What are your thoughts on the Penguins having another outdoor game? It wasn't really a big secret that the Flyers and Penguins are going to be in a home-and-home since they couldn't get it in State College a couple years ago. So what are your thoughts on the whole outdoor game thing now?
I mean, I'm with the majority on this. I'm over it. And they've just – with them playing so many and not just the Penguins, just themselves, just having so many overall, I think it's just taken away – it's taken away from what it was supposed to be paying homage to. Like, it's supposed to be taking hockey back to its roots, back to outside, back to playing on the pond. But – okay, now you have 4 or 5, however many a year, it's like, okay, it's not as special anymore. And it's become more about the show. It's about, you know, who has the best setup, who's going to have the best, you know, game jerseys that week or for that game. And there again, it has to do with the revenue of pushing the new jersey sales. You also have the ratings bumps. It's just become more about the spectacle than the game itself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would be in favor of having maybe 2 a year. You have your Centennial Classic, and then you have your Winter Classic. You don't need the Stadium Series. You don't need this special game. You don't need that special game. Give me 2 a year, 1 to start the season, 1 to end the season. That's it. If it's an Olympic or World Cup year, only do 1.
Right.
Other than that...
Now, do you think... Pittsburgh fans are going to be willing to make the drive over to Pennsylvania to see something they've already seen just a couple years ago?
I think so. Now, whether or not Philadelphia is going to put a block on ticket sales, we'll have to wait and see. But Penguins fans, it's only a 6-hour drive. It's not a bad drive until you get into Philadelphia.
Right.
But I think they will definitely travel. I mean, they travel to Toronto, they travel to Chicago, they travel to Columbus, they travel to D.C. So half puck will travel.
Right. Now, I remember you saying that their penalty kill, which is currently, let me see, I got my stats right here.
25th.
Yeah, 25th. What needs to change to get that turned around and get going?
Tonight it's not doing too bad. Rust actually opened up the scoring on a shorthanded goal, but they really just need to open their eyes more. It just seems like they're not watching where the puck's going. They're in their own way. They're not making smart decisions along the boards. And then the cross ice passes. Oh, please don't even get me started. It just needs to be more of a team effort all around, not just on the penalty kill, but all around.
Right. Now,
rather
than goaltending
always,
the...
It needs to be, like I said, it needs to be more cohesive instead of always depending on this person, depending on that person. You need to give support where it's needed, and they're not.
Yeah. Now, has goaltending been an issue with the penalty kill as well?
I want to say yes and no. Now, it is no secret at all, period, that Murray's glove hand is weak 80% of the time. And if you watch most of the power play goals and most of the goals against, they're on his glove side because they know that's his weak side. With Jari, you know, we haven't really seen very much. So that's a very small sample size. You know, his losses have come in overtime and shootouts. So he can really hold his own. But I think it's more of just a defensive breakdown, right, in many cases, and not just the goalie not making a save where he should.
Mm-hmm. Now, Penguins, they gave up they didn't protect Marc-Andre Fleury. They let Vegas take them. Do you think that was a mistake on the Penguins' part? Should they have kept Fleury and wait for Jari to completely finish down in Wilkes-Barre, or did they make the right decision in letting him go?
Oh, I've really tried to stay out of this argument as much as possible, but I think in a case of with Marc-Andre Fleury, I'm going to get thrilled for this. I would have kept him and see who Vegas would have wanted. We all knew that this deal, we came to find out this deal was basically solidified in before the draft even happened. You know, this back in February, they said, you know, we will give you Math. We will give you Marc-Andre Fleury if you don't take this person. We don't know who that other person could have been. So could it have been Gensel? Maybe. Could it have been Rusk? Maybe. Could it have been somebody else? We don't know who that other player is, and we'll probably never find out. But Marc-Andre Fleury was one of those players that, and I mentioned this in the article, that he was that team member that kept things light in the locker room. He always had that smile on his face, even when things weren't going well. You could always count on him for a joke, for a little prank, just to keep the stress level and the pressure down to where it was at least partially tolerable, and it just wasn't so overbearing on you. They don't have that now.
So do you think that could be
you have
part of the whole
Reeves, but he's the new guy. What's he going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, do you think that could lead to some of the chemistry issues they've been having this year?
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, you know, one of the things I pointed out was it doesn't feel like a team. It feels like this group here and that group there and a couple stragglers and nobody belongs anywhere. Now, can that change if they get their scoring and back to their winning ways? Yeah, because obviously winning makes you feel a lot better. But it's in the times where you struggle that you have to come together more. That's gut check time. That's take a hard look at yourself in the mirror and stop saying it's everybody else. Maybe it's me. Because, I mean, if you're not
–
if you don't trust who you're on the ice with, it's gonna show, and it's been showing.
I saw an article. I didn't get to read it because I'm always busy, so I don't get to read them. But I saw it was on Facebook. Said that Sidney Crosby is the biggest disappointment of the season so far. I think that's probably a bit of an exaggeration, but since I don't watch the Penguins. How has Crosby's play been this year? Is he starting to he's He's got to be 30 now, isn't he? He's pretty close to 30.
He is 30.
Is he on the decline now, do you think?
I don't want to say he's the biggest disappointment, but it is discouraging not seeing Sidney Crosby be the Sidney Crosby that we're used to. But we also kind of take it for granted that Sidney Crosby is who he is. We know about his training regimen. We know how he is basically always working on something, any aspect of his game that he can. He's not superhuman. As much as we want to think he is, he's not superhuman. He has played the same amount of games as everybody else. He's had the same amount of offseason as anybody else, maybe even less so. This is Sidney Crosby after all.
Well, he's got 7 goals, 12 assists on the year, 19 points, minus 12. To say he's the biggest disappointment this season so far is really far-fetched. And coming from
if you're going to talk who's been disappointing so far, I'm going to say it's Connor Sherry. He's not really seeming to fit in anywhere right now. Are you there?
All right, everybody, we're gonna take a 5-minute break real quick, and we'll be back here to discuss the Penguins. All right, everybody, we're back here. Talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins, we've talked about how they weren't living up to everybody's expectations after coming off back-to-back cup runs. Now, Medina, as we were talking during the break, you said that Ian Cole's been scratched the last 2 games and nobody really knows why. Has he been struggling lately?
Not as much as somebody else has.
Who else has been struggling on the Penguins?
I mean, there's nobody on defense that is a plus. Nobody. Mm-hmm. Over 20 games, Cole is a minus 5 with 1 goal and 2 assists. That's not entirely egregious. Compared to, you have Dumo. Dumo's a minus 9, has 1 goal and 1 assist in 24 games. And, you know, Letang's plus size has 16 assists, but he's a minus 16. I mean, he's been out there for a lot of the goals against. And, you know, I know he's coming off a serious neck surgery, but it just seems like he's playing scared. He's afraid to get hit. He's afraid to be hit. And you can't play like that and be productive your team at all, either offensively or defensively. But the whole thing, it's a head scratcher. Nobody seems it's been a coach's decision. That's it. That's the only explanation we have, is that it's been coach's decision to have him scratch. We don't know if there's an undisclosed injury. We don't know if they're talking trade, since he's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season. We don't know. it's mind-boggling. It was the 2016 season. Yeah, 2016 season. He was scratched, a healthy scratch, for about a month. As basically, you know, get your act together. And it was warranted. He was not playing well. And then after he sat for a month, he came back and was a force. But this is just a little more perplexing. He hasn't really been playing poorly. If anything, he's been laying out hits. He's leading the team in hits. He has 26 hits and has blocked 35 shots. That's most on the team in both categories. So it's a head scratcher. It's a real head scratcher.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to lose a player like that on defense. You know, you got someone sitting there blocking shots, making those hits. It's a big key. It's a key piece to lose, but being that type of player, you will get hurt. So, like you said, you don't really know what's going on. It could be an injury, which you want to think it is, since he hasn't been playing horrible. But that's the whole NHL now. We don't know anything that goes on with the players and teams. Touch on the Wilkes-Barre Penguins here real quick about find it. We'll touch on Daniel Sprong here. He's down the AHL, and you've been tearing it up down there, you say.
You know, he came out of his last year of eligibility down the queue, and he has been a force to be reckoned with. He has nine, as of last night, at least. He had 9 goals in 15 games, sitting at 14 points. So he's making a statement. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, with the way the Penguins have been not really playing lately, would it be a time to give the kid a shot up in the NHL to see what he can do, to see if he's ready to go with the team, or if he still needs to work on some things down in the AHL?
I don't see where it would hurt, honestly. Sit a winger that's struggling and let him prove it. You know, this is around the same time of year where they brought up Jake Gensel out of necessity, and he lit everything on fire. And could it do the same thing? Possibly. Could it blow up in their face? Definite possibility on either side.
Mm-hmm.
But let him prove it. Let him prove if he's ready or not, because otherwise you're not going to know. Now, obviously,
right,
playing in the AHL, playing in the NHL are two different things, but you can't just gauge everything by how well they're doing in the AHL, because it can surprise you. They can be doing super well there and then come up to the NHL and not produce at all. And then vice versa. You want to give a guy a shot and he surprises you. So let him have a shot. I don't see where it would hurt. If he does well, then you have the option to keep him up. If he is floundering, send him back.
Right.
It's kind of a cut and dry situation, but then you have the problem. Who do you sit? Right now, the obvious would probably be Hagelin, but then you lose that speed. But then you have the option. You don't really want to sit Kunackle. Kunackle is good on the penalty kill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it's actually working.
Yeah, and I say, Pelican has been the best so far, so making little changes there might not hurt as much as you'd hope it wouldn't, but it's a risk you take, especially when you're going through a little bit of a slide or things aren't going your way. A little change might spark up the rest of the players.
Right, and then you see these young kids coming up, and it could spark something under the older players as well to step up their game.
Mm-hmm.
Because that means jobs are on the line.
Right. Give us some of the positive points on the Penguins season so far.
Right now, you know, Sidney Crosby may be captain of the team, but right now this is Stocastle's year. He has been impressive on all sides of the puck. I mean, he has 2 goals tonight so far. He has 9 goals and 18 assists. For 27 points. And, I mean, he is on pace right now. I don't want to say maybe a heart contender, but I'm going to say it.
I mean, yeah, he's up there, 9 goals, 18 assists. 18 is at 27 points. I mean,
he is just playing out of his mind. And there's been this big – lately there's been this big debate on, you know, who quarterbacks the first power play line. And, you know, is it Justin Schultz? Should it be Justin Schultz? Should it be Chris Letang? Should it be Justin Schultz? Should it be Chris Letang? It doesn't matter who quarterbacks it because everything's running through Kessel right now.
Mm-hmm.
Almost – we're saying majority of power play goals right now have been scored by Phil Kessel. And it's just been magic. And him and Sid have been good, playing well together right now. He's playing good with Gino, as much as Gino might not like it. But those two on the power play together have just been absolute magic. So that's been a real upside.
Yeah, look at that stat. He does have 14 power play points so far. So, I mean, yeah, that's good. He definitely is tearing it up there on the power play. So,
another one, actually, he's not scoring as much as he should be, at least right now. But Brian Rust, he's moved on to the penalty kill, and is, you know, as lackluster as it's been, moving him into that role has really helped him develop more as a player. He has two shorthanded mm-hmm. goals so far this year. He got another one tonight. And he just seems like a more well-rounded player. You know, he's known for his speed. He's got pretty good hands. But now that he's being used to kill off penalties, it's not something that he's used to. You can kind of tell. But he's growing into it. So I think that will really – once he gets his – mind around it fully, it will be a real positive for the team.
Right.
Let's see. What else?
No.
I'm reading through my notes.
God.
Bear with me.
Sure.
Jake Ensel is no longer snake bit. He's gotten his scoring back up. He's flying around the ice again, so he's definitely got his confidence back up, which is good to see. You know, having that youth and that speed back on the team is definitely an asset. So, you know, having a guy like Daniel Sprong up here with Gensel again would, you know, that could definitely pay off.
Right.
Everybody was so gung-ho about Ryan Reeves coming to the team. And I like the guy. You know, he seems like a good character, a good guy to joke around with. He hasn't really been producing offensively. But, I mean, it's good to have that big body on the team and that bit of a – we'll call him modern enforcer, if you will.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem like, at least for the time being, other teams aren't taking as many liberties as they usually do. Now, could that change? Obviously. But it seems things have gone a little quiet on the let's check Sidney Crosby in the head front.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm pretty sure the last thing you want to see is that giant mitt of Ryan Reeves coming towards your nose.
Exactly. All right, everybody. Phone lines are open, 661-449-9307. If you have any questions, opinions, anything like that, go ahead and give us a call. We'll go ahead and get them answered for you. That's 661-449-9307. Go ahead and give us a call, and we'll be back in 5 minutes. All right, everybody, we're back, and we're talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins. We're here with Medina from the Pens Initiative. You can follow them on Twitter, at the Pens Initiative. Medina, one final question. Are the Penguins going to three-peat this year?
It's going to take a lot. It's going to take everything they absolutely have and maybe more. You know, with the Metro being as stacked as it is and with how well Tampa is playing and how well, you know, other teams in the league are playing, and even Vancouver, I mean, Vancouver right now is playing out their minds. And it's going to be a battle. Do I think they're going to make the playoffs? I think they'll at least make playoffs. But as for a three-peat, I don't want to be the Debbie Downer, so I'm going to say hope for the best and expect the worst.
So you're saying there's a chance, basically.
There's always a chance. There's always a chance. I mean, honestly, you know, when Penguins were down against the Capitals last season and they let them come back in the series to force a game seven, people thought it was done. That was it. They thought Penguins were going to lose game seven and that's it. No. The Penguins seem to know when to elevate their game at the right time.
Right.
But here's the thing. Everybody around them, every team around them seems to just be playing at an outstanding pace right now. And it's going to be one of those things where are these missed points in October and November going to come back to bite them?
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in December and then obviously after the holiday break. Their schedule gets a lot easier after the first of the year. Whoever thought signing off on 19 back-to-backs needs to lose their job, that was just not okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like the NHL is making it as difficult as possible for them to do it.
Right.
So it'll definitely be interesting. Do I think they can do it? I think they can if they get their minds right and if they make the right moves to put a team that's competitive enough against the other top teams in the league on the ice. Do
right.
I think they can do it with the team as it stands now? No.
All right, Medina. It's been good talking to you, but we're going to be ending the show here. So definitely enjoy it, and we'll give you a call next time.
All right. Well, thanks for having me on, and I look forward to talking to you guys again.
All right. Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, everybody, that was Medina from the Pens Initiative. So it's going to just about do it for our show. Tomorrow, 10 a.m., we're going to be talking about the Philadelphia Flyers again. You can join me, Kevin Fortier, as we completely destroy the Philadelphia Flyers. We destroy Dave Hackstall. Just everything about the Philadelphia Flyers. We're going to pick them apart, destroy them as they go on their seven-game slide. So that'll be tomorrow. 10 a.m. Eastern Time right here on the Gloves of Hockey podcast. So, definitely, if you have some questions for us, call 661-449-9307. And we'll hear your feedback and all that. But, yeah, join us tomorrow, 10 a.m., for the Philadelphia Flyers segment as we destroy them. Have a good night now.